Previously on Documenta and Son.
In quick succession, you applied for your first job.
Oh, yes. Yes, I did.
And also got your first date.
If we can call it that.
Yes, we can. Okay. We are. I'm calling it that. That's what it is.
Okay.
So we don't have to describe, you don't have to go into it, but just how are you feeling about both of those things? Let's start with the job.
Anxious. Because I have yet to actually call the place that I applied to and say, I submitted my online application. And then, like, who knows if I'm even going to get an offer, you know, get an interview.
Hello and welcome to Documenta and Son, being the adventures of a dad who's gay and a son who is figuring shit out, figuring his shit out. My name is Documenta Barbarism, honey. I forgot what I was going to say. Shit. I wasn't going to do that. I got it.
Yeah.
My name is Documenta Barbarism, Days of Twilight, Nights of Frenzy.
There we go. And I'm Dingle Mary, Fork in the Socket.
Do you want to give context? No, let's not give context.
No, no context. All you need to know is Fork in the Socket.
That's good. Let's keep it a mystery.
Yeah.
Well, how's it going, Dingle Mary?
Oh, it's going pretty good. I just passed my driver's ed test today, so now I can get a... Now I can get my blue card and start actually learning how to drive, which is tray exciting.
Yeah, they really stretch out the process here.
It takes 3 years to get to get a normal license.
Mm-hmm. That's probably better.
It is. It's absolutely.
And I wish that, even though it's totally untenable, I wish that they had a system that they required people to retake the test, the written and the, at least, and the driving test, like every 10 years or something.
They probably should. They really should. It is nice. Like, this process is mainly for teens. So, like, it's most stretched out when you're starting out immediately as soon as you can, from 16 to 18. But if you're above 21, the process is a lot shorter. And, like, the time that you need to spend with... Like, there's no restrictions on passengers or time if you're older than that. And then, like, the time you need to spend in each phase is, like, halved.
Okay, interesting. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I can see that. And I remember when we first moved here years ago, all I had to do was, like, take the written test again or something.
Yeah, Mom was saying when she moved back to Salt Lake City, all she had to do to get her license there was to take the written test, but because she had already had a license there and it was the fourth time she would get a state license, they were like, you can do it open book.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
She lucked out.
She did.
And I'm grateful that you passed. We had a little bit of stress during the test prep period.
Sure did.
But as usual, I was stressing for nothing and didn't need to be.
I don't know my grade yet, so we'll learn quite soon how tense and close it was.
It does not matter.
No,
you passed, and that's all that matters.
I succeeded. That's all.
And now you're going to start driving. Oh, shit.
And now I'm going to start driving. Oh, shit.
Last time, we left our viewers, also our listeners, with some cliffhangers.
Nope.
Just like Naomi Smalls' feet in a... That was not very good. She has cliffhangers a lot.
Oh, I get it. That's funny.
When your toes hang out.
Yeah.
That wasn't very good.
That's funny. But it could have been something. You just needed, like, a little bit of polish.
Yes, it could have been something if I were funny, clever, quick, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of ifs.
Exactly, yeah.
But anyway, the cliffhangers were... So, as if you remember, last time you had both... You were...
Oh, yeah, there were several cliffhangers.
Yeah. So, literally, last time, these things had happened, but one was you had applied for a job, and you had scheduled a date. So, let's fill our listeners in, starting with the job. What has happened on that front?
I go to work on Monday.
Woo! You got a job.
I got my job.
It was so, just so you know, it's not always this easy.
No.
You don't always just like be like, you don't like put a blindfold on, spin around 7 times, throw a dart, and it lands on a job. And you're like, I think I'll do that job. And then you go to that job and you're like, hello, I would like this job. And they're like, okay, here's this job. It's not always going to be that easy, just so you're aware.
I'm sure. Yeah. They literally said like, during the process, and I was talking about myself, and then she started talking about the experience of working at Walgreens, the person who...
Oh, yeah, and it's at Walgreens.
It's at Walgreens, yes, and it's at Walgreens. But she said, we weren't actually looking to actively hire anyone. I was like, oh, no. And then they're like, but we're happy to have you on. And as soon as we can, I was like, oh, phew.
Oh, interesting, because I had gone in, and the sign was up, and the cashier, I asked, and she said they were definitely hiring.
Yeah, exactly. And the application form was available online, too, so I was like, really weird.
So maybe it's just an open-ended thing that they always have available
maybe
for exactly this type of scenario.
Exactly.
When a qualified... Well, no, you're not qualified. No, you have no qualifications. When an intelligent and bright candidate shows up, even one who has absolutely no experience at all.
Drex them Sklauks. So yeah, that's the Drex them Sklauks people had a baby with the Swedish chef. That was what that voice was.
Yeah, definitely. So that's very exciting.
Yes, it is.
I mean, you got the job a while ago.
Like but 2 weeks,
it's just that you're like actually going in to work now. Not 2 weeks, because we do an episode every week. You're going in, you're starting next week.
I'm starting next week, yes.
That's exciting. How do you feel about it?
Very anxious.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, it will be my first job, obviously. I want to make sure I don't absolutely goof it, you know?
You will, but that's okay.
Wow.
Not all, you will, sometimes. Sometimes yeah, you'll kill true. It. Don't put too much pressure on it.
That's true. But also, for the first day, they want me to come in from 4 to 9, which is around when I would get home normally. To 9 o'clock. And that's when I go to bed usually. And then the next day they want me to do it from 4 to 10, and I'm like, woo.
Yeah, they're just throwing you right into the rat race.
Yeah, super. Yeah. I said like, yeah, I'm willing to work whenever, and then they're like, all right, we're gonna push you to the absolute max limit of what defines as overdone child labor.
Yeah, like to the upper limit of what the state will allow. What your poor little teenage brain.
Exactly. The limit was 40 hours, and they're like, we can push that to 41.
Nah, I'm sure it's just while you're training, they really want to, you know.
I bet. Yeah, and they were saying that, like, early on, the schedule was going to be, like, super flexible and changing all the time to meet, like, just to meet my needs and the needs of the store, but they want to get a set-in-stone schedule as soon as possible.
That would be great.
Yeah.
And it's close by, and it'll be... I think it's a good first job.
No, yeah. It seems relatively easy. She said, we don't get many customers
in there. Yeah, there are hardly any. Every time I go in, there's like nobody there.
Yeah. And then she did say, but the customers we do get can be a bit of a doozy.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm just super excited.
Yeah, I mean, that's great.
Yeah.
I'm excited for you. And your wallet.
And my wallet.
That's going to be exciting. And I'm trying not to think about the fact that you're making 3 times the amount I made at my first job when I was earning $4.25 an hour at Dairy Queen in Richland, Washington in 1995.
And I'm sure you're also trying not to think about how I'm making more than you're making right now.
You're not making anywhere near the amount that I'm making right now, but thank you for playing. I award you no points.
Wow!
But that said, you are making more than I have made at most of the jobs in my life.
That's true.
Partly because I haven't, you know, for the last decade when I was doing schooling, I wasn't really working a real job mostly.
Yeah.
And when I was like working at the movie theater or something for also minimum wage. But that was more about the movies.
Ooh, I have PTSD about your experience at the Netflix call center.
Yo, you're telling me. But yes, I would work a 4-hour shift to make $17.
Wow, that's not great.
And when I was working at Denny's, I didn't know that So you know, servers only get paid like two something an hour, and then they're supposed to make the rest in tips. I didn't know that if you didn't make minimum wage in tips, the owner is supposed to
provide,
make up the difference.
Yeah.
And the owner took advantage of the fact that I did not know that. So I would work a whole night shift at Denny's and sometimes make $15.
That's terrible.
Yes, I have been exploited over and over because I have been a fucking moron.
I'm just glad that my boss seems cool. You know, she has a Mario Kart calendar up in her office. That the money offered up front is minimum wage and slightly more. And that it seems like I'm going to be paid minimum wage and slightly more, you know.
Yeah, that's great. And now I don't have to pay for anything for you anymore. You're going to have to start buying all your own high heels now.
This next topic is a little bit sad, I must admit.
Are we moving on? So we're moving on from job to the other. So remind people.
A friend of mine at school.
You had set a date.
Yeah.
We were going to go on a first date.
Yes. Unfortunately, due to weather concerns, we had to postpone it to the next week. And then because of weather concerns and a doctor's appointment, we had to postpone it to next week. So.
And now you're starting a new job.
And now I'm starting a new job. Never gonna happen. So y'all, you're going to have to keep waiting for news on that front.
Yes. And the weird thing is you haven't really talked about any of your feelings or how you feel about each other or anything since then, right?
No.
So it's just this weird, awkward thing between you that you just ignore?
Yeah, pretty much.
And none of your other friends know about?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, when they listen to this episode, or episode.
They do. I know the person in interest, like
the person that we're talking about, yeah.
They have
listened to the person of interest. You're making it sound like
right. I'm making it sound like they're on my hit list. They're
most wanted.
Yeah. They are.
They listened?
They listened, or he listened to last week's episode.
Oh, and?
He said, "Oh my gosh, you sound so cute. It's so cute to see you so flush." And I was like, "Oh no."
Adorable.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. We'll have to just keep us updated, though. I guess there probably won't be any news on that front for a while.
Mm-mm.
Well, in complete contrast, my dating life is also going nowhere. Nothing has happened on that front.
Twinsies,
yay! Now I know why.
I'm really feeling awkward now.
Let's do some gay trivia.
To the person eventually writing the transcript for this in the future, I am so sorry.
Don Slater.
You held that for pretty long.
True. I kind of even forgot. I started to just look down at the book and forgot I was even doing it. I could have kept going. Yep. Cohen Inc. got shit on me.
Ooh.
Don Slater, one of the founders of One Inc., a gay organization, and Harold Call, founder of Mattachine San Francisco. Oh, no, you asked this one last time.
I did.
Turn the page, yeah. They were the first gays to appear as such in life, remember?
Yeah, we're on.
Oh, but it's helpful because the next one is about that.
Oh, so.
In what year did Colin Slater appear in the magazine? A, 1964, B, 1967, C, 1969, or D, 1966?
I'm going to go with C.
C, 1969. Mm. Yeah, I bet you are. You bet you would. It's A, 1964.
Dang. Oh, really? Early is that?
Yeah,
that's sure. Actually surprising.
Yeah.
Also, real quick, I do want to just say, did they give the answer to the previous question?
No, they didn't do that.
Oh,
no,
wow. That's surprising.
They're smart gays, I know.
Yeah.
What New York mayor used to frequent the gay Sunset Club in drag? A, Fiorello LaGuardia. B, Jimmy Walker. C, John Lindsay. D, Ed Koch.
I'm pretty sure they were talking about this person before.
No, that was the very first governor of New York and New Jersey in the late 18th century.
Right, that's right. Work, colonial drag, bitch.
This is New York mayor. So A, Fiorello LaGuardia. B, Jimmy Walker. C, John Lindsay. D, Ed Koch.
I feel like they want to name an airport after a gay person, so I don't think it's A.
Gay I don't know that it means that they were necessarily gay.
I don't think they would name an airport after a drag.
Because also, Giuliani, he was famous. I don't know if he dressed in drag a lot, but I know there are, he went to some parties in drag sometimes. But so I don't think it was a gay thing.
I don't know how to feel about Giuliani anymore.
No, you do.
I do?
Nothing has changed.
Okay.
He always was and always will be a fucker.
All right. Cool. I'm going to go with A, because LaGuardia is a name I recognize.
Good guess. B, Jimmy Walker.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about him. By what decade had the word gay become the self-descriptive phrase of choice among homosexuals? A, the 50s. B, the 20s. C, the 60s. D, the 30s.
I feel like it's either the 20s or the 30s. I'm going to go with the 30s.
No, you need to watch. Oh, you were close. It'd be the 20s, it says.
Oh, wow, really?
The term gay entered the American lexicon right after World War I. During the 20s, it became widely used among gays to describe themselves, but it did not reach outside circles until the 40s.
Interesting.
As always, we'll take what they say with a grain of salt.
Yep.
Anarchist Emma Goldman, who we saw portrayed in Assassins, wrote and lectured on the implication of lesbian feminist perspectives for American society up until A, the 30s, B, the 20s, C, the 40s, D, the 50s.
The 50s, I'll say.
C, the 40s. She died in 1940.
Ah, dang. Wait, is Emma Goldman the one who pointed the gun at her kid?
No, she's the radical anarchist who had that sweet scene with Czolgosz. He was following her around while she did her lecture tours, remember?
That's right. And they had a replacement.
Yeah, they had the understudy. Scene didn't really land the way it should. But she's a famous character in a lot of things. Well, the other one I'm thinking of is Ragtime, the novel and the musical and the movie. But yeah, she was kind of like a Rosa Luxemburg type, except more, even fierier and more outspoken. And
wow, that's surprising.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because of his reportedly uncommon mannerisms, Vice President William Elman Wheeler, while serving as senator from New York, was nicknamed A, Aunt Wheeler, B, Miss Thing, C, Girlfriend.
I hope it's B, Miss Thing.
C, Girlfriend, or D, Sister Wheeler.
I think A is the most likely option, but I want it to be B so bad. I'm going to have to go with A.
Very good.
Yes.
Way to follow your heart. It's not going to be Miss Thing. Uh-oh, here comes Miss Thing.
Yeah. Work, Mama. Work, yes. Mama Wheeler, work.
When was the first television appearance in America by a gay on behalf of gays?
Boots the log cabin down, Mama Wheeler.
What? Like, why log cabin?
Because it's old and colonial.
I don't think this was, yeah, maybe, I don't know, I guess it doesn't say how old, long ago, but it's just funny because log cabin Republicans are like,
oh, that's true.
It's like, do you know what those are?
Yeah, they're like rednecks, aren't
no,
they?
No, log cabin Republicans are gay Republicans.
Oh my gosh, my joke is even better than I thought.
Yeah, that's why I was like, wait a second.
Whoa, am I a comedic genius?
No, you're an accidental.
Find out next time on next episode of Document and Sun.
You're an accidental something.
Wow.
You're definitely an accident. You weren't actually, so that joke doesn't even work because you weren't an accident.
We
purposely stopped taking birth control and tried to have a baby. Yay. So you were definitely not an accident. Yay. A big regret, perhaps. An accident, not really.
How can I be a regret? You're milking my content for money. Off the pot.
Yes, that's true. Your content.
We live in the world of content today, Dad.
It is well known that Eleanor Roosevelt had a very close relationship with another woman for many years. Oh, wait. No. What? I read a question and then we were talking about Log Cabin and I never read the answers to that question. So going back, what was the first television appearance in America by gay on behalf of gays?
That's funny.
A, October 1962, B, December 1965, C, June 1969, D, April 1964.
The 1964, D.
It was A, October 1962 by Franklin Kameny, a key figure in the history of gay liberation and founder of the Mattachine Society of Washington, D.C.
Dang. I didn't realize that the first one was 1962, or I would have said that one. Because apparently everything's happened earlier than I expected.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, it is well known that Eleanor Roosevelt had a very close relationship with another woman for many years. Even during the First Lady's years at the White House, this woman lived in the Roosevelt's private quarters. Sorry, Roosevelt. What was her name? A. K. Summersby Morgan. B. Judith Exener. C. Lorena Hickok. D. Gladys Johnson.
I'm going to go with A.
Always go with the cock. It's C. Lorena Hickok.
It is? Aw, oh, dang.
It has been strenuously denied that Hickok and Eleanor Roosevelt had a lesbian relationship, but it has been proven that Hickok herself was a lesbian and had numerous lesbian affairs. I think that has also been debunked by this point. I mean, like, I don't think there's any doubt anymore that it was a gay relationship.
Awesome. That's cool.
Yeah. It's like a known fact at this point, from what I understand.
Eleanor even more than I thought previously.
Oh, yeah. Eleanor was great. She was influential in getting the Federal Theater Project, like, off the ground.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. She worked FDR to get him. Anyway, we don't need to go into what she did for FDR, but yeah. Uh-huh. Because they... Anyway, sorry. We're not going to start talking about Federal Theater Project.
And I've spent a lot of time researching this, and I'm so happy for you about it, but...
And I love that for you.
And I love that for you, but...
But that podcast never happened, so move on, bitch.
It will eventually.
No, I don't know if I want it to. We'll see. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
All right, let's do one more.
Okay.
What were the names of the two homosexual spies from the British Foreign Office who defected to Russia in 1951, setting in motion one of England's most vicious witch hunts? A. Alan Leeds and John Meredith. B. Donald MacLean and Alan Turning. C. Donald MacLean and Guy Burgess. D. Alan Maxwell and Gary Sullivan.
I don't think Alan Turing defected.
They said Alan Turning.
Oh, Turning, not Turing. Oh, that makes a lot more sense.
I think they're playing a trick, though.
They are probably playing a trick. I don't know. C.
It was C.
Hey!
C. It was C. MacLean and Burgess were two spies who, because of their homosexuality, gave new meaning to the term security risk.
Oh, my God.
Is that a joke? I don't even get it if that's a joke. Whatever.
That's funny.
We'll just assume that it is a joke and roll our eyes at these 80s queers and move on with our lives.
I still can't get over how you say homosexual when
you read this book. Let's take a homosexual break.
Okay, well, I'll take a bisexual break.
You're always rubbing your bisexual agenda in my face.
Don't support bi erasure. Okay, we'll be right back.
All right, welcome back, flamers.
That's not what I was expecting, but sure, we'll roll with it.
Today we're talking... Actually, I'm not really sure exactly what we're talking about. I know all the different things we're talking about. Yeah. We haven't decided the exact lens or, like, the title yet.
Yeah. It was originally going to be specifically Bronski Beat's most famous song, Small Town Boy.
Yeah.
And then... Dad found this 45-minute documentary called Youth Framed.
Framed Youth.
Framed Youth, sorry.
The Revenge of the Teenage... Oh, shit, I had it till you said Youth Framed.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Framed Youth, The Revenge of the Teenage Perverts.
Right, perverts, that's it. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so exactly like you said, I wanted to just talk about Small Town Boy. Because it's legendary, it's epic, it's important, it's gay, it's openly gay, it's super gay, and it's just, it kicks ass, and it's one of the best songs ever, best pop songs I've ever come across.
Exactly.
Said the actress to the bishop. I guess it'd be the other way around. Anyway. But then, yeah, as we dug into it a little, like you said, I found the documentary, and I just thought maybe we should just talk about just that moment a little more in general.
Yeah, that, like, time period.
Yeah, so we haven't done a ton of research into it. There's a lot more to uncover, but it just really is such a wonderful and exciting period in culture and in art and in music and, you know, centered in London in a very interesting way.
Yeah, and the same year as Small Town Boy, West End Girls released.
I mean, come on.
It was the year. Those two songs alone are, like... Yes.
Yeah, that's like pop trinity, pop godhead, pop canon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really amazing. It was an incredible time to read about. I love reading about it. I love watching movies from that period. I mean, I never stop talking about Derek Jarman. I don't think I actually talk about him enough on here. as much as I spend actually thinking about him.
You really haven't talked about him much on Documents and Sun. I'm not sure about Adventures in Game Sitting.
No, I definitely don't think about that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is weird, because I'm literally just always thinking about Derek Jarman.
There's like 15 Derek Jarman books around the house somewhere.
No, they're all... Shut up. Are you joking? Because they're all right on that shelf next to my bed.
They all are right there. I thought there were still some out there in the living room.
No, I keep them literally on the shelf next to my bed.
For easy access?
Yes, and to always look at and get inspired by. That's cute. And I'm surprised we haven't done a Derek Jarman specific episode. And speaking of which, it would have been his 80th birthday last week.
Oh, work.
Yeah, so happy birthday, Derek. Sorry you died of AIDS. Mm. But yeah, I love Derek Jarman. And this is right when he was really coming into his own as a filmmaker, as an artist. He'd been around for a while, but there was just something in the air in London that was then quickly sucked right back out of the air by AIDS and destroyed. Yeah. But for a moment, this is brief, beautiful, shining moment, things were glorious.
Yeah.
So let's start by talking about Framed Youth, The Revenge of the Teenage Pervert.
Sure, I'm down.
So tell us about it, just from what you saw. We haven't done a ton of research on it, but we did watch it.
Yeah, we just watched it. So it was made by a group called the Gay and Lesbians of...
I think it was just like the Lesbian and Gay Youth of London or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically just a lot of interviews with the various members about their experience being gay, both sexually and culturally, and also interspersed with the classic gay documentary meta of interviewing the masses about gay topics.
Man on the street interviews.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly it. There's a lot of great music in it. I liked the music for it. And it's just very fun. They really like stopping the video throughout.
Yes, it felt very much like the work of teenagers who loved film.
Yes.
And were like drunk on the possibilities and wanted to make an experimental film like the ones that they loved.
Exactly. And I mean, there's a certain charm to that, right? But also it is annoying because the first 5 minutes is like very choppy footage. And I was like, I feel like I'm going to have a stroke.
Oh, please. You are overstating it.
I am
overstating it. Really? You thought it was annoying? I just found it endearing.
The first 5 minutes of where it was very choppy footage, that was like annoying. But yeah, it was cute.
A lot of random freeze frames.
Yeah. I liked it. I enjoyed it. What about you?
Yeah. I also liked it and enjoyed it.
Look, I don't have the greatest of opinions, but at least I have them.
Yes, it was rough and it was fun and just very vibrant. You could tell they even included shots of them working on the film.
Yeah.
So there was all films are, I can't remember that exact quote or who said it, but it's like all films are a document of their own making.
Oh, that's cute.
You know, because you're filming, the thing you're filming is also what, anyway, it's about what it's about what you're filming. And anyway, I get it?
The premise. If I get it, the listeners can.
Okay, good, because
I'm not sure about my friends.
Oh, who are definitely going to listen to this.
Yeah.
And slap your face.
Look, one of them punches me every day. It's just the way of life.
Yeah, and you deserve it.
Wow, okay, good to know.
But it was... So what was I saying?
You were talking about...
Oh, right, how they documented even their own making of it, yeah. So it was this feeling of excitement. And did you get a little scared for them, too, for the girls out on the street doing the interviewing people?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Most of it was just, like, one-on-one. But at one point, there was, like, a lot of people crowded around them. Like, while one person was, like, when they learned that they were lesbians, they, like, tried to, like, run away, basically.
Sort of. But she was making a show. She's like, ew, get away from me. Like, ew, don't touch me. You're lesbian.
But also, there was, like, a big crowd. And I definitely agree. Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes you could see, because, these girls are fearless. You know, they would ask them questions like, what is a lesbian? Do you know any lesbians? And then they would say no. They would say, like, are you sure?
Yeah.
But this was when she would say, are you a heterosexual? And they would be like, ew, gross, no. That one woman was like, no, I have a husband and three kids. Like,
now it's classic. That's like, should they teach Arabian numbers in school? Like that trick.
It's Arabic.
Oh, it's Arabic? Shoot.
Yeah, Arabian is...
Oh, yeah, Arabian is...
is a peninsula and a horse.
And I'm Dingle Mary. A peninsula and a horse.
That's all right. We know what you're talking... If I knew what you're talking about,
then the listeners will know. Yes,
except for your friends.
Except for my friends.
But, and they were... But the best was when the one guy was like, hey, I've got a question for you. Because she said she had been with men before. Because, yeah. You know, people just assumed that they hadn't. And he was like, so who was better? Basically, who's better in bed, men or women?
Yeah, they asked, who did you have more sexual pleasure with? And she was like, women. And he was like...
The look on his face was so priceless. It had never occurred to him.
I know, which is hilarious.
So, yeah, it's not... It was groundbreaking at the time from what I've read about it, just because it was gay youth openly talking about their experiences. Yeah. And I'm not sure where it was broadcast.
It earned some kind of award.
Did it?
Yeah, at the beginning it said, like, winner of the 1983 Gay Something Award.
I'm glad. I hope people don't come to this podcast expecting journalistic rigor.
Yeah, facts and logic.
It was broadcast somewhere. I think it won an award. I don't know. It was made by some group.
I liked it. I enjoyed it.
This has been another No, shit. What? I need to not try to do a joke ever.
Yeah, just be yourself. It's what I do, and for some reason, people find me funny, and I just roll with it.
That's good. Thank you for that life lesson. Oh, wizened and experienced elder. No, you're right. I'm sorry. That was very... what's the opposite of ageism? What's it like when you... Is there a bias against youth?
Huh. There must be, right? Because that's the epitome of the boomer meme.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone must
have. That's called. Whatever that is, it was that. And I'm sorry. As though you couldn't have wisdom or intelligence just because you're young. So I apologize. Slap my wrist. So what were we talking about?
About the logics and facts and rigor we provide in this documentary.
No, but about the documentary, what were we talking about?
We were talking about the person on the street. The man on the street interviews. And how we felt scared for them. And the person who had their mind blown when they learned women could have sexual pleasure with women.
Right, yeah. So it was it was all over the place. They talked about a lot of different things, which I think was really mimics the way that we learn and process. Yeah.
There is definitely still, like, a structure to it. There is definitely distinctive chunks split up by, like, montage, you know? And they'll often, just in, like, what they're interviewing about, you can tell what it's about. Like, sexual experience, experience being discriminated against.
Right.
Clubbing, you know? Like, that. There was definitely a structure to it. But it was very kind of all over the place, which is a choice.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you expect from a group project.
Yeah, exactly. Made by teens.
Yeah, some of them told about violent experiences that they had. Do you want to tell about the one guy, the one who had the worst?
Yeah. The major part of that experience that I remember is that the group of, like, horrible people...
The group of horrible people. There was, like, four guys.
Yeah.
That chased him and...
Yeah, they, like, kicked him to the ground and apparently played tic-tac-toe on him with a razor blade.
Yeah, he said they play knots and crosses, which I think is tic-tac-toe, with a razor blade, while another one was peeing on him.
Yeah.
And just, like, hitting and kicking him. And then he said he finally sort of stumbled, once they left, he stumbled around till a woman found him and called the cops. And they found two of the guys.
And then let him go, then go the next morning.
You're right, and that was, nothing else happened. So that was the most extreme. There were a couple of other stories like that. Mm-hmm.
One told of a story of something that happened at a place that they had left 30 minutes before.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We're pretty sure the guy who got beat up so bad was from Liverpool. Definitely from that area, because you could barely understand what he was saying.
Yeah. It was also randomly the only scene he was in.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe he was too traumatized.
Yeah, maybe.
But usually, like, about Manchester is about as far away as I can get before I stop understanding what people are from London, before I can't understand what people say. You know, you get, like, Manchester, Leeds, Liverpool.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
For sure, for sure. What about, like, south? Like, if you're going down, what is the...
There really isn't much south.
That is true. Like, it's like Wales. London,
yeah, well, Wales is west.
I don't geography.
Yeah, you don't geography in America. So if you remember our trip, remember we drove up north to Leeds. Yeah. And then we went up a little further to the Lake District. Then we did a circle. We swung back around and along the Welsh coast, so like west.
Got it. And then went
down along.
So for some reason what I was thinking was we went down, or like we sort of like spent time in Leeds up here, right? Uh-huh. But we went down to Lake District. And then down further.
No, it was up and then around.
Oh.
And swung back that way and then along the southern coast.
Got it. And that's where the White Cliffs of Dover were.
Yes, on the very opposite corner from Wales. That's like
southeast. But I meant like the south shore area.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So that's not, and it's, and I don't know, like, you never, I don't know that there is like a Southern UK dialect. Hmm. I mean, I'm sure there is, but I don't know what it is.
It isn't in the common knowledge, in the common.
Not in my common knowledge.
Yeah.
I think you usually thinking of like Midlands or like further away for the West or further North is when the really strong dialects, like the North.
Yeah.
Scotland, obviously, you know, yeah. Really strong. But anyway, the teenage perverts. Was there anything else you wanted to say about the documentary?
Yeah, real quick, I wanted to say most of the people they interviewed, or at least that they showed in the interview, were like people who had like not enough knowledge about homosexuality to make any real kind of comment or opinion on it, you know, like people who didn't know what homosexuality is.
On the street, you mean?
On the street, yeah. Uh-huh. Not the actual gay people.
Right. Well, that's why I thought you were criticizing the faggots for not knowing enough about their culture. I was like, did we see the same documentary?
I did appreciate that they included one interview of a mother who said, like, if my daughter came out as lesbian, I would support her. And I think that's good, because it's good to show most people are misguided.
Yeah.
Some people... guided.
Guided. And the interviewer was taken aback. She was like, wait, what?
Yeah, she was like, wait, we found someone who agrees with
I think
us?
She thought she was lying or faking. She was like, wait, really? Are you sure?
Yeah, it's true. It was funny because like there was kind of like a motion in the microphone and it just kind of went still. And she was like, really?
In disbelief.
In disbelief, yeah.
Yeah. But there were a lot of funky filters. They definitely were playing with the possibilities of video.
Yeah, exactly.
There were some just... some montages of just random clips from pop culture. There was a random cartoon. Like homoerotic moments in pop culture.
Yeah, it was really fun. Do you have anything else to say about the
documentary?
No, I was gonna segue into our next segment, but you can. If you have anything else to say about the documentary before
I was going to segue into our next segment. what were you going to talk about, Jimmy?
Yeah, I was going to talk about Jimmy.
So talk about fucking Jimmy.
All right. Jimmy, last name is...
Somerville.
Somerville is one of the gays in the group.
One of the gays, yeah. One of the makers of the documentary.
Yeah, I think he was credited as one of the editors. Uh-huh. And if you didn't know, he's the falsetto guy who sings in Brodsky Beat.
The lead singer, yep.
Exactly. From what you've told me, Steve Brodsky reached out to Jimmy after viewing this film.
I mean, that's what it said on Wikipedia.
Yeah. And then they sort of collaborated on music, and then boom, we have...
There were three people in Brodsky Beat.
Yes.
Steve Brodsky, Jimmy Somerville, and Larry Steinbatt. Steinbachek. I don't really know how you say his name.
Interesting.
I think they're all from Glasgow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And all but one of them are dead.
Oh.
Yeah, I was reading about them. So Larry Steinbachek, the keyboardist, died of cancer.
Yikes.
In like 2017. And Steve Brodsky, he had had a stroke a few years before. But then last year, I think, it limited his mobility. But then he died of smoke inhalation in a house fire.
Oh, no.
I think because he couldn't move after the stroke very much, which is horrifying to think about.
That's terrible.
And surprising that I don't think any of them had AIDS. I don't know their status, but they didn't die of AIDS, which is amazing.
Yeah.
That they lived that long anyway.
Yikes. It's always a bad situation when somebody dying of something that's not the bad disease is a good thing.
Yeah, no. No, it's not them dying of something else. It's that they lived that long is what I'm celebrating. And then Jimmy Somerville, of course, was the lead singer. And he sings a song that I think he wrote, too, in Framed Youth.
Yeah, it said in the credits that he wrote it. It's called Screaming, I believe.
Yeah. And it was a pretty song.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Brodsky Beat, I really don't think I was aware of their songs growing up. I don't know how much, you know, because 83 was when their album came out, and they were already broken up by, like, 84, 85. Well, no, they didn't break up. Jimmy Somerville left to form the Communards, which is, I think I'm saying that word right. It's a word I've never heard said out loud. I mean, someone living in a commune.
Oh, interesting.
But it's basically the same style as Brodsky Beat. But Brodsky Beat carried on with the other two and then some other members.
Mm. You must have heard the song. You must have heard Small Town Boy.
I don't remember if I did. You know, and because I remember music from back then. You know, like I was keyed in to So it definitely, and I really don't, I must have, because I feel like when I started to become aware of it, because it's so pervasive in so many gay-themed movies and media and stuff over the last decade, decade and a half, I feel like it felt familiar, but I don't have any memories of it.
Interesting.
The way I do so many other specific pop songs, you
Interesting.
Know?
Yeah, that is surprising, because I feel like often I'll walk into your room, often to bug you about something, and then I'm listening to a song, I'm like, whoa, this is a really good song, and you're like, yeah, it's from my childhood. I'm like, of course it is.
Yeah. So maybe I did, but I don't remember, but regardless, it's entered my life, and I have just been obsessed with it.
Yeah, it's so good.
I mean, it's, you know, we people have made such a huge deal about Lil Nas X. They keep calling him, like, the first to be, like, openly gay and release. He's definitely the first to do it on that level.
Yeah.
No one has done it and been at his level of
fame. Yeah, the top of the pyramid.
Yeah. Being, like, one of the biggest stars on Earth and able to release an explicitly gay-themed everything.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's true. I mean, that he definitely is the first. But it's wild for me to think about this band who was so explicitly gay. Like, all three members were...
Yeah. The whole video, if anyone cared to watch it, was about a gay boy getting bullied because he's gay.
By the object of his
of his affection. Yeah. And then his dad kicking him out because this leads him to learn he's gay.
Yeah. Classic story. And interestingly, we noted during the documentary that his mother actually supported him.
Yeah.
So he personally, it sounds like, didn't go through that quite as much, at least within his own home.
Yeah. And I think that is kind of reflected in the video, I realize, because the mom is, like, kind of supportive. She, like, tries and keeps the dad away a little bit.
It's not so much that she's supportive as that's, like, a typical mother role in those scenarios.
That's true.
It's like, in that, it's kind of cliche, but the idea of the overbearing father, the fearful child, and the mother in between trying to protect the kid, but also keep peace, you know?
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, definitely, it's cliche, but only because it also is so pervasive.
Yeah. This is the first time. Well, okay. It's not the first time. I've seen this video before, but it's the first time that I really watched it with like a critical, how gay is it eye? Or sorry, with a queer eye.
Queer eye for the bronze guy.
Yes, you did it. And... to be honest, beyond the obvious, this boy walks up to a man and says he likes him part and gets bullied for it. There isn't anything like super explicitly gay about it.
I guess it's kind of coded a little bit. In the way, like, because it's about living in a closeted existence out in the world means that you rely entirely on looks and on glances.
That's true.
So, you know, I mean, he's very clearly watching the way the camera makes it clear that when they're at the pool, he's watching the guy, that he's watching him directly to the exclusion of everyone else.
That is true. Like, he briefly acknowledges that his friends walk in, and then he just goes back to staring at the hot man.
Exactly. And to the point where actually now that you mention it, I don't know if the other two friends are the other members of Bronski Beat. I don't know that in the video that they're supposed to actually be there. Like they did come out of the snack bar, right? Like, so yeah, like they were there, they showed up. But like you said, then he just turned away. And then they showed him coming out of the snack bar. But then they also ran off when the gang came up and started chasing him. So they weren't there when he got beat up. But then also when he's on the train leaving, we only see him.
Yeah.
It's him leaving alone on the train, I'm pretty sure. But then at the very end, they're there.
Yeah.
So it's almost like I don't think he had any support system, I think is the point. I don't know. I don't know if they're meant to be guardian angels or manifestations of the friends that he wished that he had or something, but I'm pretty sure. I don't know. We need to watch it again. Did that not occur to you?
Interesting.
They were never there during the times of stress. Well, he was talking to them in the locker room, though.
Yeah.
But then he just walked away from them. I don't know. See, it's very
interesting.
Strange.
Yeah, I guess my first view brain was like, friendos!
I think it's definitely ambiguous, and we should go back and watch again and see.
Interesting.
But for anyone who doesn't know, and, you know, when we watched this video a little while ago with members of my family, they didn't know that it was gay.
Yeah.
You know, there's a way, because, you know, we don't really ever pay attention to lyrics, and it doesn't explicitly say...
I'm gay, hi.
Yeah, I'm gay. Hi. Do you want to read some of the lyrics?
Sure. Just
point yeah, out. Start with... So the song, we're not going to go too deeply into the song, but I love the way it starts with it's almost like, you know, he's saying, to your soul, to your soul, to your soul. And then the way he says cry is almost like a scream, like a guttural scream, you know. And then the beat picks up and just, you want to read us some of the lyrics?
Sure. You leave. No.
Wow.
You leave in the morning with everything you own in a little black case, alone on a platform, the wind and the rain on a sad and lonely face. Can I memorize this for poetry and you'll give me money for it?
You have a real job now. I'm not. I guess, I need to officially, I haven't officially fired you from poetry learning.
Wow.
From that job you haven't done for years anyway. But I apparently you still thought you had access to.
Mother will never understand why you had to leave, but the answers you seek will never be found at home.
Lights will hide you home.
And hide your bones.
Sorry, I just think of that anytime someone reads lyrics.
It's true, though. The love that you need will never be found at home. Run away, turn away, run away, turn away.
Run away, turn away, run away, turn away, run away.
Run away, turn away. Okay, I'm done. Pushed around and kicked around, always a lonely boy. You were the one that they'd talk about around town as they put you down. And as hard as they would, tried, they'd hurt to make you cry. But you never cried to them, just to your soul. No, you never cried to them, just to your soul.
See, that one's a little more confusing for me. You were the one... Oh, wait. And as hard as they would try, they'd hurt to make you cry.
And as hard as they tried to make you cry.
But no, that's not what he's saying. He's saying as hard as they would try, they'd hurt to make you cry. Does that mean that they were acting on their own hurt, turning it on you, on the subject, or...
Or if it's just to fit that lyrics. To fit
the meter.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just means they would really... I really don't know. But yeah, you never cried to them, just to your soul. You never cried to them, just to your soul. Run away, turn away, run away, turn away, run away. And then just the last verse.
Okay. You leave in the morning with everything you own in a little black case, alone on a platform, the wind and the rain on a sad little sad and lonely face. I just read it, but yeah.
Run away, turn away. Sorry. Ugh. And I think why this resonates so much for people, beyond just being just a kick-ass beat, I mean, I think why it's so successful good. Is because you can dance your balls off.
Yeah, your it, little you know? Heart out.
Your little balls off.
Okay, well.
But it's because this story resonates with so many. I mean, this is what London, especially in a place like the UK, where London is the destination. Like, that's where you go. You know, here you could, I mean, New York, obviously.
And then there's also, like, LA.
Yeah, there are lots of big cities you could go to that always, you know, often, like, the gay rights movement actually started in Chicago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
To a certain extent, yeah. So there were...
I wonder if that has...
I mean, it didn't start in one specific place, but Chicago was a sort of first center. It was a
focal point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if that has any relation to why Bear Pride is held there.
But no. It's just because it's the third biggest city in the country.
Yeah.
But you've got LA, you've got Seattle, Boston, Houston, Atlanta. Like, there are a lot of, you know, there isn't, even though New York was obviously, like, culturally the gay center for the U.S.
Yeah.
At least at this point in the 80s, certainly that was the destination. But in London, you know, in the U.K., London is where you go.
That's true. Yeah. There isn't really any other, like, big.
Yeah. Where you're going to go? Newcastle?
Liverpool?
Yeah. So, I mean, those places. So Manchester actually has a. Has for decades has a really strong and thriving gay community as well. So London is not the only place, but
it's more,
and the song isn't about London.
Yeah. It's more London, even though London or not London, the UK and America are similar in that there are a bunch of different gay spots. London is unique in that it's the spot, whereas America, they're all one spot.
Many. Yeah. I think you could say that. But also the fact that London is really the center of the world, is really the capital of the world far more than New York is, let's be honest. New York presents itself as such, but London is really like, and I mean, that's by design. That was the whole point of Empire,
was
to make London the center of the world. So it's not like an accident, you know. But so I think it's a story that resonates. So not only could you dance, but it's powerful. And then I was thinking also about, but then the fact that they were out and open was also a huge thing, too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
The album was called Age of Consent.
Mm-hmm. Which is a great title.
Uh-huh. Which, do you understand now why it was called that from what they said in the documentary?
Yep.
What? Why?
Because it's about sexual consent.
Yeah, like literally the age of consent. The legal age of consent.
That's true. And they were talking about it like towards the end about the different legal ages for gay consent in different places. They said in the UK for gay men it's 21 and there's no...
It was at that point.
Or it was at that point. And there was no...
Didn't say for lesbians because they... Female sexuality just didn't enter into the minds of the male lawmakers.
And then, according to one book that they had back then, the legal limit in Hungary was 10 years.
Yeah, that seems a little crazy. They kept going, getting lower and lower. They're like, in Hungary, it's only 10. And then another guy was like, let's go there.
They really did?
Yeah, did you hear that?
That's so bad.
Yeah. But yeah, so the album Age of Consent on the, so you know, in vinyl, you can often, the liner notes, you open it listed the different ages of consent for different countries.
Oh, that's cool.
Because that was something that they were fighting against because, I mean, homosexuality had only been decriminalized as of like 67 or something in the UK. So after that, it was legalized, but the age of consent was 21, whereas for heterosexuals, it was 16.
Oh.
And I really don't even understand why. It's just some sort of homophobic bullshit, you know. So I don't know what the rationale was for it. It did finally get lowered. I don't know. I should have looked it up. I don't know if it's 16 even still.
Mm. Either or both.
It might be 18. Mm. I don't know. Let me check. Because I do want to at least...
I'm also curious to know if there's a difference here in America.
Uh-huh. It was finally lowered to 16 in England, Wales, and Scotland, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I don't know that there's, let's see, gay age of consent, USA. I don't know if there is a difference. What? The age of consent is
12?
For federal law, but there are no restrictions for consensual sexual activities is 8. Sex with someone 12. Well, this is Wikipedia.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a lot more crazy in the U.S.
Oh, so it says technically 12-year-olds to 18-year-olds can have sex, but depending on the circumstances, there.
Yeah. So like minimum age is 16 for anyone aged 20 or older. Anyway, it's a lot more complicated.
Got it. I'm sure that has to do with the creepiness formula you can find on online.
What's that?
You put in the age of the male. And the age of the female in the relationship, and it tells you exactly how creepy the relationship is.
Great. But so that was, so they were very politically minded.
Yeah, clearly.
And I never paid attention to their other hit is called Why. I had never paid attention to the lyrics, but I just looked them up and it's similar.
Which, for the record, is such a different video.
Yeah, it's a great video, but also a lot more fantastical and silly.
Yeah. At one point, the dude is pleading to God to free the workers.
Yeah.
And also, he starts out working as like a meat preparer at a grocery store.
Like a butcher.
Yeah. And it's just funny because there's a lot of log sausages. Like
handling sausage, yeah. Yeah.
And then the first price tag we see says $69.95.
Yeah, which is a little campier. But the lyrics are, contempt in your eyes as I turn to kiss his lips. Broken, I lie. All my feelings denied. Blood on your fist. Can you tell me why?
These are a lot more explicitly gay lyrics.
Nuh-uh. Oh, yeah. As I turn to kiss his lips. Yeah. Right. You and your false securities tear up my life, condemning me. Name me an illness. Call me a sin. Never feel guilty. Never give in. Tell me why. You and me together, fighting for our love. Can you tell me why? It's wild.
Wow, yeah.
I had no idea, because it's a very fun song.
It is very
fun. It's also really poppy and fun to dance to.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Big time.
And do you remember, so in Pride, do you remember the movie Pride, right? About the
gays.
The gays. Unionizing. Lesbians and gays support the minors.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's not a good movie, but it's great. Yeah. It's one of those movies that's great, but not good.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great way of putting it. That's a really good way of putting it.
I've loved it ever since I saw it. I mean, it's so unabashedly just emotional. Like fun. Yeah. Yeah, fun. But I also, like, I cried 4 or 5 times throughout it.
I think I might have cried.
Every time I see it, even though I've seen it. And partly I remember I saw it first in London when I was still there at the Empire Cinema on Haymarket in the West End. And so it was like the special moment, like for me, you know, but then I just, it's just fun and campy and emotional.
Yeah. I love it. If you have a way to access it, you should totally watch it.
Yeah, check it out. The director, Matthew Warchus, is actually more known for theater. He's more done theater. He did, like, Matilda, I believe.
Oh, interesting. Like, yeah. The big production that's toured worldwide?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Wow, that's cool.
Stuff like that, I think. I'm pretty sure. But in Bronski Beat, do you remember they held that benefit concert, Pits and Perverts? So Pits and Perverts was headlined by Bronski Beat.
Oh, that's right.
And they sing Why a little bit in the movie.
That's right. I remember that. Was it actually Bronski Beat that...
I don't know. I doubt it because they were older. Yeah. They were 30 years older. But maybe, I don't know, because they were also sort of back and out of focus. Mm-hmm. I doubt it.
But I wonder if that's like true to reality, if that was actually...
It was. They did.
It was?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I checked. Yeah. They really headlined Pits and Perverts.
That's epic. That's cool.
Yeah. It's very cool. So they were great, and it's just a wonderful time to be alive and making music. And then AIDS came along and ruined everything.
Woo!
Didn't ruin everything, but like you said, West End Girls, Pet Shop Boys, same year. How could those have come out in the same? Like, what kind of scene produces these two epical, incredible? And I did look up Pet Shop Boys. Neil Tennant is definitely gay. Apparently, the other one, whose name I can never remember, who kind of on purpose. It's actually funny in the video that
he's there, but he's just sort of like standing around. Just
he's translucent
throughout.
So it's like and that's kind of apparently the role he always played. As I don't remember his name, and apparently he's thought to be gay, but I don't know if he's ever confirmed it.
Interesting.
But just this vital and vibrant scene.
What is it about 84 that caused those two hits, those two mega hits to come out? What's going to happen in 2084, you know?
Yeah, it was just a confluence of things. I mean, pop music had been, I mean, I don't know, I'm not a historian, so I can't say, but yeah, there was something about that moment. And I was reading an interview with Jimmy Somerville of Bronski Beat about how it felt like the next revolution, like the new 60s, like it was that same sort of youthful fervor, both in culture and, you know, changing laws and fighting homophobia and things like that.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then AIDS ruined it.
Yeah, of course.
As it does.
Mm-hmm.
But we got some great songs out of it.
Yeah.
Well,
West End Girls. Do, 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 do.
I know we just watched that, but I kind of want to watch it again already.
The West End Girls video?
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, I just want to listen to it.
Is those two are some of the best songs ever written.
Yeah.
IMHO.
Yeah, I would agree. Those are definitely like...
We don't have near the experience. No one has enough experience or knowledge to say such a thing, but of what I've heard...
Yeah. At least in our personal experiences, those are two of the best songs we've
Which you
heard.
Care about because you're listening to this. Exactly. So obviously it matters.
Yeah, for some reason you care about what we think. So, you know.
I'm glad that you don't have to get on a train, hop a train and go to London to find love or community or home. You don't, right?
No. I have love and home and community. Well, I have love... A third of a home and community.
You have a home. Shut the fuck up. So that's good. I'm glad you don't have to struggle through that. But what I love about Framed Youth is that it just shows, even when they talk about horrible things that they've suffered, it shows how vibrant and joyful queer community is and can be.
Yeah. There's a lot of shots of gays being happy.
Gays being happy. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Or laughing at each other's sex jokes and sexual experiences.
Yeah, and it really is a shame. Like, throughout it, I was like, you know, you should take this and show it in GSA. And you were like, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, that's a great idea. And then they get to someone saying, like, so did you stuff his cock in your ass or something?
Yeah.
and we're like, never mind.
Yeah, he's like, then we took out our cocks and started wanking. Yeah. I was like, oh. So, you know, but it's there. It's there on Vimeo. It's there on YouTube. I would watch the Vimeo version. It's higher quality, but it's there to watch, and you should.
Yep.
All right. Well, it's been lovely.
It's been lovely.
What?
I never gave my vegan opinion.
That I knew there was something else. We'll talk about veganism next time.
Okay. Yes.
That is, I knew there was another. I got to start writing this shit down.
We have two cliffhangers now, and they're the same cliffhangers from last episode.
Just call us Naomi Smalls. All right. See you next time.
All right, bye.
Bye. Bye. This has been another House of Barbarism podcast, written, recorded, edited, and produced by Document of Barbarism, your friendly neighborhood mountain man fairy princess. Remember, there is no document of civilization which is not, at the same time, a Documenta Barbarism. Mwah.